Psalm 73. And that can be found on page 586 in the Pew Bibles. And we're reading from 1 to 14. That's Psalm 73, 1 to 14. Surely God is good to Israel, to those who are pure in heart. But as for me, my feet had almost slipped. I had nearly lost my foothold, for I envied the arrogant when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. They have no struggles. Their bodies are healthy and strong. They are free from the burdens common to man. They are not plagued by human ills. Therefore, pride is their necklace. They clothe themselves with violence. From their callous hearts comes iniquity. The evil conceits of their minds know no limits. They scoff and speak with malice. In their arrogance, they threaten oppression. Their mouths lay claim to heaven, and their tongues take possession of the earth. Therefore, their people turn to them and drink up waters in abundance. They say, how can God know? Does the Most High have knowledge? This is what the wicked are like. Always carefree, they increase in wealth. Surely in vain have I kept my heart pure. In vain have I washed my hands in innocence. All day long I have been plagued. I have been punished every morning. May God speak to us through that.
Thank you, Lee. It's written by someone called Asaph. He was in charge of one of the Jewish worship choirs in his day, and that was the time of King David. A bit like Richard looks after our little worship group. So this man looked after probably quite a large worship group for the Jewish ceremonies, as I say, in his day, which was in King David's day. My Bible notes say it may have been written by one of his sons in a later generation, in Solomon's time when the temple had been built, but that's a mere detail which doesn't really matter too much. But as you can tell from what you heard, Asaph was in quite a bad place. He could see the people around him taking no notice of God, apparently having a great life, getting on with life, and yet getting away with all kinds of evil. And he struggled to cope with that. He struggled to think about what all that meant, because of God being an all-powerful God. What was happening here? As we saw in verses 2 and 3. As for me, my feet had almost slipped. I'd nearly lost my foothold, for I envied the arrogant when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. He was looking at them and thinking, well, I'm trying to follow God, but they're getting on so much better. Why is that? I can't understand it. He struggled with both local and international levels of forgetting God. He says the wicked have no struggles. And he says that those with power have callous hearts, iniquity, evil imaginings. And they scoff and speak with malice. He was aware that some people have a very easy life and are successful, even though they have no regard for God. Verse 11 says, these people say, how would God know? Does the Most High know anything? In other words, is there a God there who's taking any notice of what's going on around me? Maybe sometimes we're in the same position. Maybe we think about what's going on around us, either in our own lives or internationally, and think, well, where is God in all of this? And I can't understand this. Certainly on the world stage, we might have said recently, why did President Putin take part of, or use his forces to take part of the Ukraine, take part of another sovereign country? Why are those Russian jets bombing Aleppo and killing children and women, as well as rebels, bombing hospitals and schools? And why do members of ISIS feel that they have to kill everybody who disagrees with them? Why do they sell their women or other women into sexual slavery? These are the kind of things which are very hard to answer. We know as Christians it's to do with the sin within our hearts, but it's hard at times to think, well, why is all this going on? Closer to home, it might be you know someone down the road who doesn't pay their taxes and gets away with it. Someone who smokes all their life and doesn't catch cancer, but your mum's got cancer and she's never smoked. Someone you know has the money to jet off to the Caribbean for Christmas and buy their children wonderful presents, whereas you're not in the same position. I'm not saying we're thinking about this all the time, but there might be times when we're jealous of those who have more money or more power or more influence than us and use it for their own ends. We think, well, why not me or why them? Well, Asaph was in that frame of mind at the time that he wrote this psalm. Certainly at the time he wrote the first part of the psalm. And he was struggling with what he'd seen around him. No doubt he'd seen what the kings and rulers around him had done. Lee took a group of us to the British Museum, I think it was beginning of this year, and we saw on carved stone what some of those kings did to the people they'd captured. He must have been aware of that, Asaph, and aware of others around him within the Jewish nation, I'm sure, who got away with murder, so to speak. And he was trying to understand it. And the second half of the psalm is his response to that, and that's what we're going to look at, because he gave four pointers, as far as I can see, four pointers to help us cope with feelings and thoughts like that. The first one is in verse 16, if you've kept your Bibles open. When I tried to understand this, it was oppressive to me until I entered the sanctuary of God. Then I understood their final destiny. I loved that verse when I read it, because it says, whatever's going on in the world there, something happens when you enter the sanctuary of God. Now, for Asaph, that was the place where everybody gathered for worship, because they believed that God was in that one place and they had to go to that one place to worship him. For us today, it's different. We know that God is omnipresent and we're able to follow him wherever we are in life. But even so, coming here as a group of people to worship together, to learn together, to encourage one another, that helps us in these difficult times, because we see things from an eternal perspective. That's, I think, what Asaph was thinking about, and what we can experience as well. When we come together as a body of believers, we see things and we hear the scriptures expounded, and we see and we are able to worship in song and in prayer. That's when we start to see things in an internal perspective. And so it's something we have to do if we're going to follow Christ successfully and not get down into those difficult times, that we remember to stay in touch with him, commune with him, be aware of his Spirit in our lives. I know Terry Griffiths the other week said, don't go to church, be the church. I'm not trying to speak against that. I'm saying coming to church helps us to be the church because we're with our brothers and sisters and we're learning together and encouraging one another. And of course we can commune with God, not just here, but outside. Even Asaph actually said that in verse 23. He says, I am always with you. That's not God speaking, that's Asaph. Asaph is always with God. So he was aware that God travelled with him when he went about his daily life, and that's true for us. Jesus in John 14:23 said, if anyone loves me, my Father will love that person, and we will come to them and make our home with them. And that's what we as Christians believe, that God is with us and within us, and his Spirit's in us, and we're able to take that Spirit with us wherever we go. And staying in touch with God is one of the 4 points that Asaph saw was so important in terms of seeing things in that eternal perspective. The second point is that we mustn't forget that God's holding us tight. As much as coming to church and so on is us trying to keep in touch with God, it's as much that God's keeping hold of us. Verse 23, the second half, says, you hold me by my right hand. We can picture that as a parent taking a child across the road. However much the child is wriggling, even if they're having a tantrum and want to run off, if that parent is holding onto that child's hand, they're going to cross the road safely. And you know that I go to the occasional football match, and even there, where two players have come together and clashed and fallen over, one helps the other up when there's enough sporting spirit there. So it's not just us clinging on to God, but it's God clinging on to us. He holds us by our right hand. Now, in those olden days, the right hand was considered the stronger hand. Those who were left-handed were looked upon with a bit of peculiarity, thought a bit weaker. But the right hand was the strong hand. So God's holding us by our right hand so that we can't wrench away. We are clung to by God as well to keep us safe and to follow his pathway. When David Lindley came at the beginning of October, he preached, if you remember, if you were here, he preached on Jesus walking on the water. Now, I can't explain how that miracle happened, but the point I wanted to pick out here is that when Peter joined Jesus and walked on the water as well, and then lost his faith and confidence and started to sink, it was Jesus who reached out his hand and pulled him up and rescued him. Peter had the lack of faith, but Jesus was still there to rescue him. And that's a principle that we can remember too. And Peter himself, later on, after he was made head of the church, one of the early apostles and leaders of the church, he had that occasion where it was with John. In Acts 3, he met a man who was crippled, begging for money at the side of the road, and Peter prayed and healed him. And it says, taking that man by the right hand, he helped him up, and instantly the man's feet and ankles became strong. The miracle occurred as Peter lifted him up. So taking somebody by the right hand and keeping them secure is one of those wonderful things that we all need at times, even metaphorically. And God does that for us. He keeps hold of us, even when we're a bit weak and wobbly. And Jesus said that no one, not even the evil one, was able to take those he counted as brothers and sisters out of his hand. We have that kind of security with him. Now, just thinking about helping one another and lifting up and so on, we'll just play the Paraclesis DVD once more. Perhaps you saw it a couple of weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, was it? Just 2 minutes of about the series that we're going to start in January through our house groups. If you're not involved, speak to George or someone, George Hyder, who is trying to organise people into their house groups or into a new house group. Thank you. Oh, okay. Yeah, is that true? Who can't see the screen then? Right, at the back there. I'll try.